Welcome to Barry Maguire's Tales from the Trenches, real-life stories of Canadian real estate investors. Learn more at barrymaguire.ca.
Banking rules have changed. So our job in the world of being strategic real estate investors or sophisticated real estate investors is to realize that we can't change the environment. We have no control over what the Feds are doing or Bank of Canada is doing or what the economy is doing. Our job as sophisticated or strategic investors is to actually look at the economy, look at the environment, and say, how do we navigate this environment? Because in every situation, opportunity lives. You know, I think there's many of us here that are old enough to understand and to realize that, you know, we see an economy go and we're frozen in it, perhaps, or an environment that we're frozen in it. We don't take action, and yet there's people around us that come out the other side and they just made a bazillion dollars. And you go, what the heck? How did I miss that? It's because we are looking at the environment and letting it shut us down, as opposed to looking at the environment and go, okay, I know that somewhere here is opportunity. Somewhere here is a strategy that if I take that strategy, embrace it, I could probably succeed in this environment. Now, in the world of creative buying strategies, Barry Maguire and Donna Maguire have really opened up into some expertise in different areas and have been putting on extended programs, because it's not something, we can't teach you RTO and agreements for sale or whatever, or joint venture partnering today. You have to go deeper with it, and it takes some expertise and it takes some time and energy. Now, Barry and Donna, over the past few years now, doing extended education. Our panel today, Sam Perrin, Kelly Fry, Cherie White, Tembi.
Becca,
thank you. Yes. Are some individuals that have, through the coaching and the programs that Donna and Barry have presented, have learned and actually taken some action with it. Now, I want to be clear on something. This isn't to sell programs. We're not here to sell Barry and Donna's programs, so don't confuse this conversation. But what it is to say that to present to you strategies and opportunities that live outside of what we do in a, let's say, a buy and hold or straight joint venture agreement kind of situation. These are individuals who have taken and have actually gained some expertise in specific areas. Agreements for sale and RTO, I think, is the primary two that we're talking about today.
Fix and flip,
that's true.
Don't forget that.
Yeah. So you've got a whole pile of expertise here and some real success happening. You've got a guide that's like gray-haired and old and been around for a long time. Oldest man in the world, I'm told.
I'll get him later.
So I'm really here just to set this up for you guys. Barry's going to take it away. He's going to work with these panelists to get your questions answered and give you some insights into what's achievable. And I'm going to pass it over to you, Barry.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Full house, huh? With extra chairs needed.
Yes.
I have to say this all the time when we talk about creative real estate and creative buying strategies. We all at RAIN and individually, and I personally believe in long-term buy and hold as the foundation of success in real estate. I don't want anybody to run out of the room and go, well, skip all that buy and hold or sell them or I won't buy them. I'm going right into creative stuff. I believe it's a supplement for most of us. It's a supplement. Creative is a supplement to long-term buy and hold. Just want to say that. Doesn't mean you can't be a full-time creative investor. I just think for most of us, getting started and learning how to buy a few properties and then moving into some creative things is a better way to go. Our whole mantra on the creative side of things is to give you some tools so that you can, if you understand the strategies, you can recognize the opportunities when they pop up. That's the essence of success. You keep doing your buy and hold stuff, and every once in a while you go, well, buy and hold isn't going to work, but man, I could do a rent to own on that or an agreement for sale, or I could pass it off to somebody else who could do something. So it's recognizing those strategies, understanding the strategies, and recognizing the opportunities. That's the essence of creative real estate. Now, having said that, this is the all-star panel, I'm telling you. It is the all-star panel. And we could just very clinically go into discussions of various strategies and techniques. But you guys, you just have to hear their personal stories. So Sam, you're the closest to me. So we're going to start with you.
Oh, shucks.
So Sam, how old are you?
So I'm 31 years old.
31.
And I started, how did I start my real estate journey? I was a police officer with the RCMP, posted at my first posting in Masset, British Columbia, on the northern tip of Haida Gwaii, if you guys know where that is. And moved, since it's a limited duration post, because it's isolated, we ended up moving to Kamloops as my second post, and obviously needed to buy a house, and picked up a copy of Don's book along the way, and figured out we needed a house with a suite, and got addicted to the rental income, and bought another, and started JVing. And long story short, January 1st this year, I left the RCMP, took an early retirement thanks to real estate, and I had taken Barry's course just months prior, I believe, to taking my retirement. And a lot of those quick turn strategies or rapid cash strategies is what I've been doing for the last year. The reason I left the RCMP, the primary reason is my wife and I couldn't have kids, so we ended up adopting three little kids. So we have three children under four, and it happened pretty quick. We went from zero to three in about 18 months. And I was the shift work I was doing 2 days, two nights, four off wasn't very conducive to family life. So, and my wife is a teacher, so she went down to 3 days a week, thanks to the real estate portfolio that I'd built and able to supplement my income.
How many in your portfolio now?
25 doors, so I think it's 11 titles. I just bought a fourplex, so I'm kind of
so
confused.
And I
sold a flip, in August. So.
And you've done a number of strategies. You've done rent to own, and you've flipped, and you've done, what else have you done?
Well, I've done some assignments. That's how I paid for half of Barry's course. I said, well, if this is actually going to work, I'm going to try it out. And sure enough, I found a townhouse, 20,000 under market, and it was a private deal just off Kijiji. Funny enough, and found an investor who was very happy to pick it up and pay the $1,500 plus. I got a management contract for a couple of years out of it too. So,
And then you took the rapid cash course out of
and,
paid
yeah,
for
and
it
yeah,
with
I used,
your assignment.
I used the proceeds. I said, okay, well, this is probably going to work, and I'm sure glad I took the course. So,
okay.
And yeah, since then. There's been a few creative deals that I can probably dive into when somebody else gets
okay.
Their turn
well,
to talk.
The classic add-on to that is that many creative investors use their creative strategies to generate money today, which helps them acquire properties to put into their long-term buy and hold portfolio. They use the creative strategies to produce money to live on, and fund those long-term buy and holds. So they're kind of going on two tracks for two different reasons. And, lots of creative investors end up just like that. So let's move over to Kelly Fry, who has a different kind of a story. Just give us some background, Kelly. Right now you're with?
Keller Williams, Elite Realty.
Kelly's a realtor.
Specializes
so
now
take us back in time a little bit and how you...
I came to Vancouver in December 1992, and I came for an accounting job. My background is I'm a chartered accountant by profession. I had a job opportunity at Ernst & Young downtown in the area of U.S. taxation. And I worked for a few years in the corporate world, and I just had this entrepreneurial drive that I couldn't seem to control. And I had been raised to get a good job, have a good education, have financial security. But I could see that it really wasn't for me. And I just wanted to be in the game of business instead of scorekeeping for other people's success, which is effectively what accountants do. So I thought, well, I'm young enough to take a risk that I can recover from. So even if I lose everything, it's not going to be that much at this point, and I can recover. So with a partner, I started a business. One of my friends said, pick something, anything, and just make it happen. So we started a maternity clothing business. Neither of us had kids, but women were getting more and more senior in the workforce. We had partners that were female, senior managers in tax and audit. And so there was just horrendous clothing for businesswomen. And so we started on weekends selling out of hotels, and then we had a retail store in Kitsilano, and then a second one in the North Shore. We were one of the first businesses on the internet in 1995, selling all over the world. We had built a catalog operation that was getting 100 calls a day, so we had to open a warehouse in Blaine, Washington. But as our business grew, we became more and more cash constrained, and despite being two accountants, we could never figure out where we were making money and where we were losing it. So we were working 7 days a week. And so ultimately the clothing business was getting tougher and tougher as it was moving offshore to Asia, and our suppliers were all North American. Plus at that point we were manufacturing too, because we to keep up with the volume and demand that we were actually producing. So I knew the writing was on the wall and I knew I had to get out, but I had $200,000 of debt at the time. I was young, I didn't even own a rental property or even my own property. And so out of desperation, I took one of these late night infomercial buying real estate with no money down classes. And sort of that's where it all began, where I sort of saw the light at the end of the tunnel, because otherwise I was going to have to go back, get a corporate job, figure out how I was going to manage all this debt and pay it off over time. Instead, I basically started taking real estate training, started buying real estate, and within a few years, probably within about 3 years, I had acquired enough real estate that I could, and the market had doubled. It was the early 2000s. And that real estate paid off all my debts to my suppliers, and I was able to go full-time as a real estate investor. And as an accountant, I couldn't go bankrupt because we lose our designation, so that wasn't even an option on the table. So at the time, I could see that the sales reps for RESPs were all over my customers in my database. I looked into it, I saw the commissions they were paying, so I started selling RESPs to my clients to make money so that all the debts in the business could be paid down from the clothing. And that money gave me earned income for mortgages. And that's how I started to be able to acquire, was through the RESP sales. So then after that point, I managed to get up to about 48 properties in a short period of time, which I did with virtually no money, just creativity with vendor take backs primarily, joint ventures, RSP loans, I did assignments, I did everything I had learned through the training I took. And then I was asked to become a mentor. I started teaching other people across the country a lot of these strategies. And 2008, 2009 hit, and that was a very difficult time. I was very over-leveraged. I thought I was going to lose everything.
Again.
And I managed to, you know, use my accountant brain, and I got new JV partners, and I refinanced best I could, sold everything I could, survived it, and I was asked to become a mentor at that time, actually, to teach other people, and I thought, oh my God, I've done everything wrong. How could I teach other people? So anyway, I realized that I could help people because I could teach them to mitigate the risk more than I had done. And then in 2011, I decided to get my real estate license, something that I had always wanted to do, but I was told you can't be an investor and a realtor, which was actually not true. And I thought if it doesn't work out, I'll just quit. But from the time I got my license, my business took off. So it's given me many opportunities to actually earn a lot of income to help my real estate portfolio and also to be frontline to deals, get more JVs. I mean, it's been a great decision. And in that time, all the way along, I did rent-to-owns, and I've sort of developed a niche and as a realtor to do rent-to-owns for other people and package turnkey deals. So we can always talk about that later. But
okay,
that's pretty well it.
That's a great roller coaster, up and down, hit everything, almost lost it twice.
But I'm much more conservative in my investing now, which is good. I made all the mistakes when I didn't have
yes,
money.
Yes, when you didn't have anything to lose. Well, that's amazing. We'll come back to some of those. So Kelly's now, having done all of those different things and probably understanding using all of those strategies, is now a realtor. And I like the notion that she's taken and puts together rent-to-own deals, package rent-to-own deals. And you'll find this as you move through your investing career, that there's lots of people who are interested in you showing up with something where you go, listen, I've got this fix and flip opportunity, this RTO opportunity. It's not one that we have to figure out and do together. It's packaged, and all you have to do is say yes or no. Lots of folks have money and don't want to do the work. Lots. All right, let's move down to Cherie White, who has an amazing story. They're all amazing. I'm trying to say who has the most amazing story, and it's hard to do. Maybe we'll do a poll afterwards. So, Cherie, just tell us about your background and how you got to be sitting on this chair.
Yeah, I'm a little bit flabbergasted to be up here with this panel, to tell you the honest truth. I haven't actually been doing real estate for even a year. I bought my first townhouse on January 3rd of 2016. So, but my story may be a little bit different because I have another job. I'm a community leader with the Salvation Army in the downtown East Side. And so my passion was to see my friends that I was working with that are trying to get their lives together and come out of addictions. They weren't getting decent housing. Like, they would just go back to what they knew, which was SROs. And I just see this cycle go over and over, and it just broke my heart. So for years I was lobbying the city to get decent housing for my friends. And finally just came to a point where I was like, they're not listening to me. And I got to do something here. So I went to, I saw a bus ad where it was like, do you want to be wealthy? And I never really wanted to be wealthy. That may be kind of weird, but I knew I needed to get money and I didn't have any money. And I needed a lot of money and I didn't have any money. So I went to a real estate info, little 1 hour thing, but it was American. So I'm trying to make this short. And I later that night, I Googled Canada, and I got to Rain, and that's where I first heard about Rain. I called Dominique, and she said there's this course that's coming up. I asked about coaching, and she said you should go to Barry McGuire's course. And so I went, and I learned a lot about real estate. So the first 6 months, I was really scared, and I just thought that the more that I know, the less risk there is. So I just took 6 months of just reading books and taking courses and listening to people before I bought my first place in January. And one of the things I wanted to share with you is I have 4 kids, and that whole balancing thing of family and professional life is really difficult. And one of the things I learned from Barry's course was around the marketing piece and how to get your business going. And so what I decided to do with my 2 youngest kids, who are 10 and 12, I said to them, guys, I'm going up to Abbotsford because that's where I'm flipping right now. And we have these letters, letters that you tell us to go and put in door to door. And so I told my kids, here's the deal. If you come with mom and you go up and down the streets and put letters in there, and you write down, they had to practice their writing, so they wrote down the address in which they put the letter through. And if I get a call back from that address, you get $5. And they were like, I'm in. $5? Are you kidding me? So I might say something about how cheap their mom is. So they, so it was great. My 2 kids would come, and I'd just drive down the street, and they were just like putting in envelopes. And then at the end, we would go to Starbucks for Frappuccinos. Yeah. So that was just a really, and I started to get calls. I remember my first call I got from one of my red letters. I was like losing it, right? And then I got off the phone and I ran into where the kids were playing video games. Like, oh my gosh, who got number 3, 4, 5, 6? And they're like, Smith. I'm like, my box. It was a huge celebration. And that's what I probably not what you want to hear about creative real estate, but the marketing piece. But that's something actually in my story I really want to share with people. When you're a mom and you're trying to, and a community leader and a businesswoman and trying to put it all together, that was just something that I found was really cool in how to involve your family. And every time that I've closed on a deal this past year, I've like bought honey buns for the whole house and you know, whatever. And it's just been
on Cherie's team here.
But quickly, I'm sure I'm thinking
too
much time.
You have all the time you want.
Just on a professional side. So what I've done this past year is I was having a conversation with Chris, who I work with on the Vine Group, and I tried to get a mortgage, but I hadn't worked for 15 years. Like, I didn't have a job because I volunteered for the Salvation Army in the leadership capacity. And so banks don't like that, apparently. And so I contacted tons of mortgage brokers, and they all just said no. Like, you don't have any job income. Like, I had good credit, but no job history. And so they were just like, no, no, no. But Chris made it happen for me. Being a part of Rain has been huge. I'm also working with Randy Dick out in Abbotsford, flipping houses.
Randy the realtor.
The realtor. Yeah. And he's been amazing. He's been like my coach. He's every question I needed to know, he had the answer for. So I first met with Randy at the beginning, and I had found a private deal off of what Barry had taught me, off of Craigslist. And I said, Randy, can you come and meet me at this address? It was around Christmas time, and I don't like Christmas very much. If I can do anything to avoid dealing with Christmas, real estate was a great opportunity. So I said to him, can you meet me at this property? And he did. And he said, I think it was him that said, don't walk away from this deal, Sherry. run away from this deal. And he said, I have a foreclosure that you may be interested in. And so we went over, and he met me later that week, and we went and had a look at it. And so we went to the courtroom, and I was like, yes, I got read the strata docs, did everything I was taught to do. That's so key. Listen to the professionals. Like, it's amazing how quickly our own brains, even though I'd been doing it for like 6 months or something, I thought I totally had this down. Like, I remember Randy was telling me to do something. I'm like, Randy, come on now. Really, I've been doing this for 6 months. Like, he's been doing it for 22 years, but there was something in my brain that was like, no, you don't really need to listen. Anyways, listen to the professionals, because I think that's really how I've gained some success. And so we're at the courtroom, and I love the story because I was so scared. I had no idea what I was doing, and Randy was just walking me through this, and he'd done it a million times. And we were walking into the courtroom, and he just looks at me and he's like, Sheree, you don't look so good. And I think I was either going to faint or vomit. Like, I was just so scared. And I went in, and then the judge announced my name, Sheree White. And then my heart just stopped. I was like, oh my gosh, I own a property. Like, and another key thing I just want to quickly share is that you don't have to know all the steps. Like, even at that moment, I didn't have a mortgage. Like, I had done the numbers, I knew, but there's a piece of faith, I think, that is part of this. That's not a strategy. Don't go off faith 100%.
The old leap of faith strategy.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. It's kept me up at night many times. But I think that if you have, like, 95% of it together, you don't have to have all the answers. And I'm still actually picking up
pieces. So you got that foreclosure.
I got the foreclosure. No, I bought it for $130,000. I sold it for $240,000.
All right, let's hear it.
6 months later.
Yeah. And that was your 10th or 15th deal, was it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. No, that was number one.
That was number one. Number one deal.
That was number one.
And so how did you sell it for us? You bought for
$130,000.
$130,000, sold for
$240,000.
$240,000. And how did you bump it up? What did you do?
Like when I flipped it, like how? So I flipped it. So I hired a contractor, which I fired later because he was horrible. He was not invested minded. So I was trying to like teach an old dog new tricks, and it was a nightmare. But it was great because that learning experience was when I came across good contractors. I knew a good contractor, because I had a bad one. So yeah, I put in $30,000. Probably more like 45, because I had to pay him for me to do the work. Like, it was a nightmare. Maybe between 30 and 45. And then I bought my second one in the summer of 2016 for $200,000 in the same complex. So that was a little bit kind of hard to swallow.
So 130 to 200.
Yeah. Huh. But I just closed on it last week for $289,000. So that was okay.
That
was okay. Here's the other thing is I hadn't worked, like I said, for 15 years. And I had on June 30th, $60,000 go into my account. And I just about lost it because, I mean, that was unbelievable. Last week, I had $108,000 put into my account. And then the week before was $85,000. Now, that's all included. That's my down payment as well, and my JVs.
It's not all profit.
And, yeah, it's not all
profit. But so in 1 year, you've done and finished three, I think you said?
Three. I own a fourth.
You own a fourth that you're
working
on? And
I'm going to buy one tomorrow, hopefully, for my fifth with Randy. So, it's just been like a crazy successful year. Like, this is really blowing my mind.
So that's 1 year for Sheree White. I can't believe it. This is such a great story when Sheree was a teacher, she only ever made $30,000 a year. And then for 15 years, you've been a mom and stayed at home with no money.
No.
With absolutely no money.
No.
And started out not knowing anything about anything. So she did what I tell people not to do, which is to dive right into creative real estate as your first thing you do. So,
yeah, so
I'm not telling you to do what Sheree did, but it worked nicely for you.
It was just one conversation where Chris says, so do you have any capital? I said, no. And so he said, well, I guess you better start flipping houses to get capital.
Ah, okay.
I said, okay.
All right.
And that was and really that was it. Really, that really was it. I also have a son, my eldest son, who's 16. He has autism, and at the right time, I've been fighting for years to get him get onto disability, and 10 years of back pay came in at the exact same time as Randy introduced me to that foreclosure. And so that was $25,000 on my down payment.
It's your seed capital, huh?
But I'm a woman of faith.
But if that hadn't shown up, you would have found some other way to get that money, because just how it was going for you.
Yeah, I have 7 joint ventures that I work with regularly now. And
and we'll get to the joint ventures in a moment. Isn't that amazing? Let's hear it for Cherie. Well, compared to Cherie, Tembi Becca has a easy, boring story. Nothing much going on with Tembi.
How do you follow that?
I don't know. You're the last one. You better ratchet it up, woman.
Wow. Wow. That's all I can say. My story is boring, really. I came to Canada 15 years ago, 2001, and I didn't have any money as an immigrant and landing in this country. And I'm not going to bore you with all the details, but basically, I ended up getting into nursing school, and after graduating as a nurse, I'm a single mom. I was a single mom at that time, and I still am. One thing was there's shift work in nursing, so it was very hard. I don't have any family in Canada. It was hard for me to do night shifts and day shifts and 12-hour shifts and leave my daughter with friends and babysitting. So I needed to find a way to make money and to get out of that shift work schedule. So I picked up a paper and it said, get out of the rat race, invest in real estate. It was a Robert Kiyosaki seminar thing. And I attended that and I almost went to Honduras to buy land. So but it was through that I started getting intrigued by real estate, and I remember I went to Chapters and I read a book about 51 success stories, and I met Catherine Brooker, if any of you know her, through that book. I actually saw her name and I Googled her and I called her.
And she's also a nurse.
And she's a nurse, exactly. Yeah. So we connected and she was my mentor when I first started. And
Catherine is a RAIN member based out of Edmonton and was a nurse and has a very successful real estate portfolio because she, like Tembi, wanted to do something other than shift work. To interrupt, Tembi.
No, that's okay. Yeah, so that's kind of how I got started. I joined RAIN 2008 and I bought a few properties between then and 2014. In 2014, I kind of reached my cap. And actually, I was listening to, I thought maybe I should go back into real estate. And I was listening to ACRE, re-listening to the ACRE program. And Peter Kinch said in that ACRE program, which you listen to on DVD, he said, if you have the capacity to make more money and help others and you're not doing it, you're selfish. And that really hit me. I was like, you know, I have to help people back home. I have to help people in Africa. There's so many women who cannot afford to take their kids to school or who are stuck in abusive marriages because they can't do anything about it. I have to do something. And I got back into RAIN. I had canceled my RAIN membership at that time. I got back into RAIN, and I attended Barry Maguire's first course in June 2014. About rapid cash, and I figured this is how I'm going to make money to invest in real estate more and maybe use that money to sponsor the women in Africa. So I started an organization and partnered with an organization which was there to help women build boreholes back home and use that money to kind of self-sustain themselves. And I did some rent-to-owns, a few rent-to-owns between then. And I think last year I did about 4 rent-to-owns during that time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to use that and use this money to support people back home. But then I realized it wasn't enough. And it meant I would have to do more rent-to-owns. And let me tell you something about rent-to-owns. It means you have to be on the phone a lot. Because you have to screen people, you have to talk to people. And I'm like, how can I do 10 rent-to-owns in a month to support this project? So it hit me that I had to teach them how to do rent-to-owns and agreements for sale so that they can kind of support their own projects. So I started a program last year to teach people in Africa, and I really went global. At first, I was advertising throughout all of Africa. Then I realized that Africa is not one country, duh. So now I specialize really in southern, mid to southern Africa, kind of like from, I don't know if you know the map, but from Nigeria going down all the way to South Africa. And I teach people how to invest in real estate using creative strategies. So I'm teaching seller financing in Africa online. So in the past year, I'm really astounded by how it has grown, because I didn't realize how it would grow. I have 4,000 people in my list, and it's just growing. And I'm so proud to see my students in Africa doing seller financing, which is from Barry Maguire. And it doesn't put so much pressure on me to do many rent-to-own deals, because one thing which I encourage them is to give quite a significant amount of the money they make to charity and to help other people to improve Africa. So it really, it doesn't put so much pressure. I still do rent-to-owns, but I don't have the pressure to do it to change the world. And for me, it's about making an impact in somebody else's life. And I don't own a Maserati. I'm not a trillionaire. But I am happy that I'm changing people's lives.
And isn't that great? So I'm blown away by this. I can't get a lawyer next door to me to understand an agreement for sale and to kind of glom onto the concept. Tembi's just waltzed over to Africa and he's got all those African lawyers doing agreements for sale, and it's got the documentation going on, and people are buying houses and creating new lives for themselves, taking our concepts and putting them into Africa and making them work. So it turned out not to be that boring a story after all, Tim. All right. So a couple of other things came out of it. Just as we were getting ready to come up here, Tembi was telling me a story about wanting to buy some land. It's Kelowna, yes, where you live, Tembi, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wanted to buy 10 acres of land. It was worth $500,000. She doesn't have the money. You're working with a realtor. So pick up the story and tell us about the 10 acres and what you did.
Yeah, so this happened this past summer. There was 10 acres of land, and I'm kind of into the addiction of buying land now, thanks to Don Campbell. But So I wanted to get this lot, and I'm like, oh, this is beautiful. It's got a beautiful lake view, and it's in West Kelowna, and it's really, really nice. And so I approached the realtor, and the realtor said, oh, yeah, it's $500,000. Do you want to make an offer? I'm like, do you think you can sell a finance or carry some financing? And the realtor was like, no. Then I was like, okay, I'll make an offer, but can I meet him? Then he's like, okay, sure. And so this seller came to my house, like, okay, I can bring him to your house. I'm like, okay. Came to my house, he's in a wheelchair, and I wheel him to my living room, and I start talking to him. And it turns out he was in the hospital, and I'm a registered nurse. And so I started talking to him about his experience in hospital and life in hospital, and we connected. And during that time, I'm like, okay, so I do not have money to buy your land. But but I really want it, and
strategy.
Yeah, I said I really want it, and I think it's a great property. And actually, this is what I said to him. Exactly what I said. It would make you happy to see me and my kids living in that place, wouldn't it? And then he says to me, oh, aren't you a sneaky person? Then I says, I'm serious. And anyways, what happened is I ended up saying, okay, I'll give you 100K and you carry the rest of the financing for me. And then he says, well, okay, I'll carry it for 1 year. I said, that's not enough. I need 3 years. He says, okay, and balloon payment at the end. Yep, no interest, 100,000 down. Carry it for 3 years, and I got the deal. And
and now you own that 10 acres?
10 acres, yes.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening with this story, the reason why I'm sharing it is because I just want to encourage you to ask. Sometimes all you have to do is to ask. Mm-hmm. And you don't be scared. Just ask. And also connect with people. This is one thing I always say. Connect with people on their personal level more than on the business level. I don't dress up like this when I go see my clients or when I'm offering. I am human. If it means going in my PJs, well, I don't. But if it means going in sweatpants, I will, so that I can connect with that person. Because people want to connect with humans. They don't want to connect with corporations. And so let's not be corporations going to people or corporate companies. Let's just be human. And that's what works in these creative strategies, I find.
So lots of deals. This is a very important point. Lots of these creative deals come out of a relationship. And it doesn't have to be a five-year deep relationship. Tembi connected with, what was his name, Rusty? Just because she's a nurse and he was in a wheelchair and they talked about hospitals, and Tembi's interested in that. And she wasn't in the back of her mind going, aha, I know how to get this guy. Because I'm a nurse and because he's in a wheelchair, if I start talking about, then this is what will happen. You are interested in the person across from you, and you chat and talk, and something will flow, and then things happen. And the key point in there is don't predict that somebody will say no. Ask. That's the worst they can do is say no, and you could have gone on to something else. But people, if you ask, will often give you a surprising answer. And the second thing that kind of fits in with that and goes along with it, and it's a really good principle, is don't predict people's why. Don't predict sellers' why. Sellers make decisions for all different kinds of reasons that you would go, they would never do it for that reason. That would never happen. Never happen. And sellers have all the reasons in the world for making decisions that are in your favor, so you cannot predict that they're going to say no. All right, so Dave, do you got a question there? We have a. Do you want to bring the microphone? Well, hold on. We're just going to get the mic so everybody can hear.
Because we are recording this, so I'll try to zoom around, but if somebody's close to you has a question, we could just pass the
We'll kind of work around. Our way around with the question. So we're going to get into some Q&A now.
I was just curious from Tembi if the realtor expected some sort of commission on that and how you compensated him for that.
Rusty paid him. He did expect commission because obviously you have to pay commission, but Rusty paid him from that $100,000.
It was a listed property, yeah. So that would be a normal commission situation.
Yeah. I have to say the realtor called me after and he said, I have never seen anybody do that. He was shocked.
Yes, I'm sure he was. All right. Any other questions based on what we heard so far? Anybody got anything to talk about? No?
Open mic.
There we go. In the middle. Pass it over.
That'd be great. Thank you.
I have a question for Sherry. Just to be clear, so you're fixing flipping condos?
I found the niche in townhomes. Tried a condo this past year, and it was not good. We named it the ex-girlfriend. We just didn't want anything to do with it anymore. So Just because of access. So the townhouse gave me the same amount of return as the condo did. And it was just so much easier to put a lockbox on the front so that professionals can come in and out. It's just so much easier. So I love doing I'm found a niche in townhomes.
Okay. One last question for you. Is there any particular age of townhouse that would give you the opportunity to make sufficient improvements to get the financial spread?
Yeah, Randy has been showing me townhouses that are in the 1980s, 1990s. And then I am an artist as well. And so then I really want to have an excellent product. So I really enjoy watching orange and yellow shag carpet turn into, and I really just bought a townhouse that had that. It was wonderfully ugly. And to turn it into something that is gorgeous. There's something in me that I love turning ugly into beautiful. I really enjoy that. It's exciting for me. I love the befores and afters.
And so your notion of beautiful is something that resonates with the buying public, because often you know, people do renovations and their notion of beautiful is kind of, back to the orange shag. So you've got something that works. You're in tune.
Yeah. In fact, one of the townhouses, it didn't even hit the market. Like Randy came in and went, whoa. And then he called somebody and it didn't even hit the market. I had an offer the next morning. So okay. I'm really enjoying that piece.
All right. Any other questions before there's one and then one back there. Nev, how did I know that was going to be you back there?
Hey, question. I'm not really even sure who to ask this of. Maybe if you just
panel.
It strikes you.
Yeah, hello, panel.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, as someone who's looking how to position myself, you guys all have very interesting stories, and thank you for sharing them. They're very cool. I'm sitting here, and a lot of times I assume I'm not alone in my thoughts, so maybe I am, but very different from what I see, different journeys, maybe using the same conduit properties. I find myself hearing your stories, and they're awesome, but I feel like I could easily get paralyzed by listening to all your stories and being like, wow, good for you, but what about me? Because no offense, but it is all about me when I'm here.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, when I walk away, I'm like, how did your story start? How did it get going? And how did you not get stuck thinking, I don't have money, or I don't have experience, or I'm a police officer, I'm not this, or I'm like, you had to overcome those things. So the first few steps to crush those things, because you didn't know you were going to be sitting on this stage, I'm assuming. So for people who are sitting here looking and thinking, okay, so I have all my obstacles in my own head, what are the action steps that you had to take at the beginning, if you don't mind? Maybe just share a couple.
So I'll speak to that, and you might think it's funny coming from a police officer, supposed to be A-type personalities and not doubt ourselves and make high stressful decisions. But I actually didn't believe that I could do it in a market like Kamloops. You know, that's one of the limiting beliefs that I made for myself. You know, it's a town of 80,000. We just don't have the volume that I could make a business out of this. And I couldn't, you know, it might work in Vancouver or in a rapidly appreciating market. So these are some of the stories I was telling myself. And then I saw that one of the facilitators in Barry's course was actually a retired VPD, Andrea Workington. So she had left after about 10 years.
That's the Vancouver Police Department.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Vancouver Police Department. So after about 10 years as a police officer, she left. And she'd gone to Red Deer, which is about the same size as Kamloops. And she'd done very well there. So for me, it was finding, and this actually, I was thinking about this, your question kind of, led right into it when Tembi was saying that she found a nurse that kind of mentored her, who had done the real estate thing. That's where I found the confidence to actually pursue what I wanted to do, was through spending that weekend getting to know Andrea and her kind of, you know, because we have a common background, right? It's hard to describe the life of a nurse if you haven't lived it. It's hard to describe the life as, you know, the things that you see and the experiences you have, all that kind of stuff. The shift work. So I don't know what you do for a living.
Contractor, do renovations.
Okay, so there, you know, there's lots of very successful RAIN members who are contractors, and I would find somebody within the RAIN community, and maybe there's even REIAs. I'm not familiar with anybody that's actually a contractor, but I'm sure that somebody could point you in the right direction and reach out. Because before I left my job as well, I reached out to an REIA who had left his job 5 years previous, and he had, you know, four little kids. So it's like, how the heck are you going to do this? So that's, somebody's already done it. There's no need to reinvent the wheel. And those limiting beliefs, if you know what they are, write them down. Because it's so funny. I had it pinned it in my office one day, and my wife, and I came back to my office one day, and my wife had scratched them all out and said, you know, like, oh, I could, you know, I could never do this. And then she'd write, oh, yes, you can, or whatever. You know, so having support, that's the most important thing.
Now, just before Kelly gets on it, so sitting right behind you, turn around and look at the guy right behind you. You're a renovator, right? Mm-hmm. A contractor and a renovator?
Yeah? No, I'm not myself. But
okay. So you guys might have a little chat about how you're being successful together. So before Kelly talks, I think at least three of our four panelists said that the way they got started is they took a course. They saw a sign on a bus or saw something on the net, and they took a real estate course to get them going. So you're already doing that. That's how they got started. And then I think if you get started and you're interested in the creative side, if you pick one of the strategies, if you educate yourself about the various creative strategies, I mean, that's where I think where you have to start. You're already a few steps up. You're already kind of interested and in a group and got some access. But if you were looking to say, you know, like, how do you get going? They all started with some education and moved themselves forward. So let's hear what Kelly has to say, and then you can jump in again in case we're not quite getting to what your point is.
I've got a couple of things that come to mind.
my second property that I purchased came from calling from local newspaper, and I was told to do this and ask for vendor take backs as some of the training that I took. I landed what I didn't know at the time was one of the wealthiest people in Vancouver, and he's been in real estate for since 1952 or something. He's 85 years old, and I call him my real-life rich dad, just like Rich Dad Poor Dad in the book. He's exactly like that. And so one of the things that I learned from meeting with him, firstly, he ran his own ad. He didn't even have a realtor. He had built a building, and I asked him if he'd carry financing, thinking a second mortgage. I didn't know he owned half the building, clear title, and that he would carry a first mortgage for me. So all I had to do was round up the down payment, and then in time, when he realized I was an accountant, he wanted me to be the treasurer on the strata, and then I became his eyes and ears, because he was in West Vancouver, and this was Maple Ridge. He had built this building with someone. So he had gotten stuck with a number of the units, and that's why he owned them, and they were all rentals. And we became good friends over time, and he became a lender for me. Every time I found a deal, I gave him a call, and he would put up the cash. And we're good friends to this day, but his thinking was radically different than, let's say, my parents or other people that I knew. And so I would think to myself, you know, my parents might have said, oh, money doesn't grow on trees. But when I was around him, I realized money did grow on trees. Everything was an opportunity. So I think in terms of changing, one of my coaches once told me that you can change by having, you know, a different influence in your life, like I had him as a mentor. Hypnosis will do it, or a peer group. And I've been a RAIN member now for 10 years. And I think at some of the darkest times that I might have had along the way, I would come to a RAIN meeting and I would meet someone who would inspire me, like today, these people. And I would say to myself, what is wrong with my excuses? I gotta, you know, I'm not thinking right. If she can do it, starting not having worked for 15 years with no capital, like what's? I gotta move faster. So, those were things that helped me: a peer group and a mentor, really.
Can I just say something? Yeah. I'm not saying take the Barry Maguire's program, but with his program, we partnered with the accountability partner, and that really helped me. So what we'll do with the accountability partner, we do weekly check-ins. And I am still partnered with that girl for 2 years. We're friends. We've taken a trip to Arizona together, and we're now in a mastermind. So I would encourage you to find an accountability partner within a room and try to be so that they can keep you in check. Because there's times when you don't, there's times when I called my mastermind and I said, I am quitting real estate, I'm selling everything, and I'm going to be normal like everybody else. There's times like that. But then your mastermind will help you and they'll keep you on track. So I would say try to form a local mastermind group with people you meet here, maybe have four of you, and be accountable each week for each other.
Those are very powerful. Accountability groups are mastermind groups where you get a group of like-minded people. And you talk about where you want to go as a group, and probably you're fairly aligned in which way you want to go. And you agree to meet on a regular basis, and nothing will get in the way of your meeting. So Andrea Workington, who you're referring to, took a course in Edmonton 10 years ago that I was helping put on. And at the end of the course, there were five people, two from Edmonton, two from Calgary, one from Red Deer, Andrea. They always met in Red Deer because that was halfway between Edmonton and Calgary. Lucky Andrea. So they met once a month, and nothing would get in the way of that. They had weekly conversations with each other. They knew where they were trying to get to, and they would come together once a month and work hard, apart from all the other connections they would have over the month, and talk to Mike. Say, Mike, last month, you said you were going to make these calls, check out this area, send out some letters like Cherie did. How have you done? What have you done? And, you know, and then if Mike isn't done it, I mean, nobody's going to yell at him, but they're all going, Mike. Right? If people are expecting you, if you've said you're going to and people are expecting you to do, it's way more powerful than you just, you know, beating yourself with a stick. So accountability group. Or accountability partners, that's just two of you, and mastermind groups where you have, you know, three or four or five people together are quite powerful. So you can start talking to other people about that and see if somebody would like to hook up with you on the accountability side. All right, now, are we getting to your question? Are you getting what you need?
Thank you for asking. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
I just quickly want to say one thing. One of the three-day workshop that I took, they spent probably about an hour at least talking about fear. And fear is such a powerful thing. And I was shocked in a real estate seminar that they would take so much time to talk about fear. And that has been, I actually have to talk, I'm an external processor, you'll probably figure that out by now. And I'm actually down in my office talking out loud, having conversation with myself, because there's one voice that's saying, you know, don't send that email, they're going to think you're a loser. All sorts of judgments, you know, and there have been many times where I've sent an email asking for private funding. I've pressed send and gone, oh, dear God, you know, I hope it works out, you know. And over this past year, like 100% of the time, or I actually have fear issues, like to call one of my joint venture partners. I see the number there. I'm like, should I answer? Shouldn't I answer? Like, I still have that. And so I answer. And every time I've answered, it's turned out to be amazing. And so the joint venture that I have on this project is only there because I told that fear voice to shut up. So yeah. That's maybe where I was, like, in this room last year, not doing anything. I hadn't purchased my first one. That's a big, I think for me, that was a big thing.
That's huge.
To tell that fear voice to shut up.
Fear can get you. So one of the things I observe as we listen to our panel talk about their stories, and they're amazingly interesting stories. It, you know, as a lawyer who puts together, you know, some of these courses, the Rapid Cash Program, and I would never have coached the gang here to do what they did. I would never have coached them through that. I mean, Kelly's a chartered accountant, knows numbers up, down, and sideways, and her ride is a roller coaster up and down, close to being losing it all. I mean, if you had to ask me, I would have gone, Kelly, what are you thinking? And Sam, I have done a number of strategies. You've done fix and flips, you've done some joint ventures, you've done some assignments, you've done rent to owns, you've done all those, right?
Yeah, working on a subdivision right now.
Working on a subdivision. No, don't do that. So that's something else that I don't do, which is to say, the best thing for you to do is to take all these strategies and just do one at a time. Just barely get a hint of what to do with one strategy. The best thing to do is immediately shift over to another one that you know nothing about. That's a good way to do it. And then once you've done that one, better get on to the third one. I say, take a strategy, bust your buns, work it around, do a bunch of them, and get good at it and keep doing it. You said subdivision? I have had any number of clients who move from these sort of this level strategy, and they think, oh, great, I can now be a developer. I'm going to go buy 100 acres, and I'm going to turn it into lots, and I'm going to sell those and build some houses and do all this kind of stuff. That's a tough gig. It really is. So
I should clarify.
But be really careful about the creative strategy of I want to be a developer, because the difference between what we're all talking about here and moving into the development side is about three quantum levels up. The time and the trouble and the effort and the stress and the regulations and the hoops that you have to get through to get development things done are just so much more than what we're talking about. So just be cautious about that. I know somebody will put up the hand and say, Barry, it's easy. I just did this. So I wouldn't have told you to do what you did. Kelly, I would have told you, you're completely out to lunch. Cherie, you want to start with fix and flip as your first thing? Don't do that, for God's sake. You know, learn about some buy and hold first. And Tembi, you're just going to conquer all of Africa in your spare time. Well, no, sorry, that's not right. Just the southern half of Africa, from Nigeria south. And, you know, help everybody over there, to get some housing and raise their game and do what they can't do. And you're going to, you know, teach African lawyers about a Canadian technique of seller financing and convince people who are leaving the country to sell their houses to folks and carry the financing. I mean, I wouldn't even have thought of that. So this is and I get taught this lesson all the time, that what I know about these strategies in my narrow legal mind is not what people take and do with them. This is a matter of understanding the core of a strategy and then going out and saying, you know what, I bet I can apply it in Africa. I bet I can do more than, you know, one strategy. I bet I can start with fix and flips and do 5 in a year when I haven't worked at a paying job and I have no idea about this. So these folks are all examples of taking core things and going out and running with it and having great success. They're absolutely amazing, fantastic stories. Absolutely amazing. All right. The opportunities and everything is not linear. It's kind of like one of those old chemistry things where you see the little molecules bouncing all over, the Brownian motion stuff. So.
Thanks. I have a question for anybody that's done a flip. And the question is, have you combined it with a different strategy, like an agreement for sale, or have you taken title and then resold the property?
Cherie, you've done fix and flips. Have you always taken title?
Yes. I was trying to do the creative stuff that Barry had taught me in his course, but with the expertise of Randy, my realtor, it just made things a lot easier. So this past year, I've actually been playing the market, which I know isn't the way to make the biggest amount of money, as Rain teaches. So that's actually one of my personal goals for 2017, is to do a private deal. Fix and flip on a private deal. And I'm not sure if that's going to be an agreement for sale or not, but definitely a goal of mine.
Yeah, so maybe not take title in some of your future ones if you can make it work.
Yeah.
And let's see, Sam, did you have a comment?
Yeah, my first flip, the title was in a JV partner's name. My second flip, it was in my company name, and a JV partner funded the whole thing with a mortgage. And I made an offer yesterday where it looks like the seller is going to be an agreement for sale where I just have to pay for the reno and they're going to and their mortgage and taxes for the 4 to 6 months that it takes. So
you're going to carry the finance.
However I can do it.
So what we haven't done in this breakout today is we haven't said, what is an agreement for sale? What is a rent to own? What is a fix and flip? We haven't gone into the technical details of what those strategies are. So we have a few minutes left. We can talk about some of those technical things. And I hate to do that because it's dry and technical. Yes.
We've got a question.
Question over here. Let's have a question.
Lady's been waiting very patiently.
All right.
No, I didn't have a question. It's just when you ask, it was just something that Kelly told me, a couple of years ago, your network equals your net worth. And that's something that really have stuck with me. And I think that's where your confidence build as well. Being around people, and that's actually what you were talking about. We were just at that time when I wanted to. So just your network equals your net worth.
Excellent.
That makes sense.
I like that.
I learned that from Kelly.
Very good.
So I just have a bit of a comment about another strategy that might be useful for those who may or may not know it, is that you guys are talking a lot about fix and flips, and it seems to be you're talking about it as a quick way to make money, but there's another strategy you can use, I'm sure a lot of you are aware of it, is you can actually fix as if you're going to flip, but then you can refinance and hold the property, which is a really good strategy because when you fix and flip, you obviously have to pay your real estate fees to sell it, et cetera, whereas if you fix and refinance, you actually get to take a lot of money, but you don't have to pay any fees, and then you just add it to your buy and hold strategy, which is what Barry's talking about for long-term wealth. End of the day, buy and hold is a really good way for long-term wealth. So it's a strategy I've used myself, and it's been really awesome because you get to take all that money, use it for another down payment, for another investment, and if you're using that for another investment, you don't even have to pay tax on that. It's almost like free money. And you get to add it to your buy and hold. So it's a strategy I've been using, and it's been good for me. Do you guys have any comments on that?
Well, I mean, Nev, I think you're right. That is a good strategy. If you buy a property that has lots of value in it, and by the way, when you're doing fix and flips, the one cardinal rule about the fix and flip is you have to have lots of room between what you buy at and what your after repaired value actually is. And it always has to be more than what you think it is. It's the key to it is having the right gap between what you buy at and what you can sell at. So if you buy, renovate, in Cherie's case, if she buys for $130,000, puts her $30,000 in, goes to the bank and they come out and say, well, that place is now worth $270,000. She finances based on $270,000. She gets a mortgage out that pays for everything that she did and gives her a big chunk of cash. She adds that house to her portfolio and now rents it out on a positive cash flow basis. She takes that big chunk of cash that she got out of it and she goes and buys another property and does the same thing. So that's a repeatable kind of strategy where you can use the creative strategy of fix and flip to just add to your, to turn them into long-term buy and holds. So that's a good one. That works nicely. Anything else, Nev?
I just want to see if anyone on the panel has done that or if that's something they suggest or have any comments on.
I have some partners and we bought an apartment building in Chilliwack in July and we're renovating every unit. We're evicting the tenants one after another and we're expecting, we put in about $500,000 into the deal. We're expecting to get all our money back. We've been raising the rents $400 a unit on a 16-suiter and we'll still own the building and it'll be cash flowing. So it was pretty exciting. We'll take the money on to the next deal.
Very good. Very good. That does. A question there.
No, just a bit on this topic. In Toronto, we use an acronym, which I haven't heard anybody use it here on the West Coast. We call it BRRRR. So
BRRRR?
It's buy, renovate, rent, refinance. So it's a common strategy.
Rent, finance. So that's just what Nev was talking about.
Yeah, maybe it's because it's cold in Toronto.
Yeah, maybe. It's good, though.
One of my JVs told me that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you add an extra R on the end for repeat. So.
Okay, BRRRR.
My only thing is, with my flips, I've always had to sell. It was a little bit risky. I didn't have the opportunity to rent out. It was, I had to.
That was my strategy along.
So that's a great idea. I'd love to do it.
So now you might think about doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to just touch on one more thing, and you probably all observed this as we listened. You heard the word joint venture in there. So a joint venture is another form of creative strategy, and it sounds like all of you folks have done joint ventures. You all have. And so did these joint venture partners just appear out of nowhere? Well, yours did. I mean, your money that grows on tree, rich guy, kind of appeared out of nowhere. But I'm guessing that your first joint venture was a little bit tough. Yeah. But what happens is, it's like everything else. As soon as you get good at something and you can say to, and you just talk about your story, money shows up. Money shows up. And I'm guessing again that now you each have a list of people that when a deal shows up, you phone your crew of joint venturers and say, or email them probably, and say, this is what I've got, and who would like to participate? Is that right?
Yeah. And the numbers.
And the numbers, yes. You send them an email with the numbers, here's my current deal, and they would be different deals that they're all sending out. Everybody isn't doing the same strategy, but you send it out to your crew of interested venturers, and these deals get taken up by, guess who? What did we say previously? The people with money. There's way, way, way more people out there with money who don't want to do the hard work. But they would love to participate with somebody who they believe understands what they're doing and who will make them a big pot of money. So, question.
With the joint venture topic that we're talking about right now, how do the new mortgage rules and everything that's just come down the pipe, is that going to have a big effect on how we create good joint venture strategies, and is there going to be some kind of a summary or some kind of an output that we can have a look at that will clarify some of the changes there?
What the reference here with the new financing rules is that banks are now asking if there's anybody in the deal that they don't know about. Are there any non-title beneficial interests that we don't know about? So that is a little bit harder to get around. And we're just starting to work our way through that. There's no real solid answer to that. But my overall observation is, and I'll go back to a comment I made yesterday that some of you might have heard, the financing and economic climate changes from week to week. I mean, there's apparently been 7 or 8 major banking changes since 2007. And when I bought my first investment property, I got a mortgage at 11%, which was great because the standard mortgage was 12% for a 5-year. if you got a 12% 5-year term mortgage, that was standard. Everybody got that. I got 11 and woohoo. So, I mean, and it's been up, down, and all around. Stuff changes all the time, and we always find a way to work our way through it, and we're going to find a way to work our way through the banks who want to know more about who you are investing with. They can't stop us. Nev, you got one more?
Yeah. With most of your joint ventures, do you put the title in your own names, or do you use the joint venture to basically qualify for the mortgage with most of your deals?
It depends.
For all my rent-to-owns, my joint ventures qualified for the mortgage.
Okay.
And title was in their name, and okay. I just registered. Well, we'll find out now going forward.
Cool. Okay. So basically, it seems like who's the strength? If you're tapped out with mortgages yourself, then try to do it with your JV partner qualifying on the mortgage. Okay.
Yeah, or just work with people with cash. That's what I am doing now. So my JV partner's just giving me a mortgage at whatever, 6% on a buy and hold or 8-12 on a flip. So
they have cash and
they got big fat lines of credit or cash just sitting there.
So you're cutting out the lender. You're not worrying about the lender.
That's right.
So that goes back to my point, is there are lots of people with money. All they want to know is that you're a believable chance, a good risk, and that you will make them some money, and they will give you money. I'm telling you. And folks,
thanks for listening to Barry Maguire's Tales from the Trenches. And for more valuable investing insights, go to barrymaguire.ca.